Brothers and sisters, lovers and sinners, artists and exhibitionists, voyeurs and connoisseurs, all you children of sex, and we are all children of sex. We may or may not be children of God, Jesus, Allah, Satan, or Eros, but we are all children of sex. Can I hear an amen?
Amen.
Can I hear an A-women?
A-women.
That's the first time the A-women was softer than the amen. Usually the A-women is stronger. Come on, let's hear a better A-women.
A-women.
Oh, thank you, brothers and sisters. We're back on Radio Suzy One on the World Wide Web. Worldwide revolution, worldwide sexual revolution coming out to you from the speakeasy in the soul of downtown L.A. And I'm here with Brother Joe.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello, Brother Joe. And Brother Bran.
Hello.
Sister Sarah is wandering around. Smacking
people
with her pearls. and we've got Brother Skip running around, Fritz and Mar and Matt, and Sister Terry is somewhere in her sick room, and Brother Michael is pulling up his shorts. And we have some special guests tonight in the countdown to Eros Day X, the 10th annual Eros Day here at the Speakeasy, will be an orgy for Obama. Inaugural ball. It's going to be ball of balls. And we have some of the stars of the ball here tonight at the Speakeasy on Radio Suzy One to kind of get excited as we get closer and closer to the date we have with Eros. Eros the god, the primeval lord of love, lust, and life itself, who breathed the breath of life into all beings. He just blew it right into everyone, and that's why I call it the original blowjob. Eros, the Greek god of sex. And Eros is also a planetoid, a banana-shaped planetoid is what the astronomers call it. A cock-shaped planetoid is what we call it. And a planetoid is, of course, bigger than an asteroid and smaller than a planet, and it comes closest to Earth at this time of year, around January 22nd to 28th. We're having Eros Day on the 24th, when the planetoid Eros is emitting, or you could say ejaculating, gamma rays. Gamma rays from its heavenly body. Anyway, we're going to celebrate, and we have some of the stars of Eros Day here tonight. We have a lot of stars of Eros Day, but we have tonight Master D.
Hello.
Welcome to
Thank
the
you.
Speakeasy. And Ballerina.
Good evening, Doctor.
Ooh, good evening to you, Miss Ballerina. And the Professor.
How do you do? It's a pleasure.
You have to speak into your microphone one way or another. It's got to get very close to your face, kind of like you're giving it head.
How do you do? It's a pleasure to be here.
Much better. See how easy it is to give head? Yes. Okay, someone needs to fix that, though, so that he doesn't have to bend and scrape before the great microphone. So Master D is from a special place near the speakeasy called the Broken Door. Want to tell us about the Broken Door, Master D?
Sure. The Broken Door is LA's premier dungeon. We have about 12,500 square feet of play area. We have about 32 stations, 7 rooms of multiple stationed fun palace of debauchery. I would say that would be the easiest way of describing it.
I think that's a good way. I've been to your fun palace of debauchery. We went to one of your events a few weeks ago. We had a great time. Very, very fabulous. Had my boots dusted by a girl with the duster on her head.
And oh, yes.
I found that to be quite charming.
We had a few of those around.
Yes. There was all kinds of little slaves and masters and mistresses, and it was just a very elegant event. Very nice.
Thank you.
So you're going to be participating in Eros Day. What are you going to be doing at Eros Day?
I will be bringing a few submissives here, as well as the professor and another mistress.
And professor, what are you a professor of exactly?
I am a professor of sociology and criminology.
Really?
I
thought you were going to say you were a professor of spanking or something.
Oh, hey.
Spankology or bondageology or something.
No, a professor
sociology.
Of kinkology.
Kinkology, there you go. But you're a professor of sociology
right.
and criminology.
Exactly.
Really? How does that... That does relate to all of this kind of S&M stuff, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Criminology, very simply, is an extension of deviance. And sometimes BDSM is mistakenly categorized as deviant. And that's how I became interested in it as a research topic. And then I was doing participant observation and got into the scene, and now I'm a sir in the BDSM scene.
A sir, that's like a dominant.
Exactly.
Now, of course, one of the most formidable halls of BDSM, non-consensual, would be the U.S. prison system.
Well, if you think about people being held against their will.
Yes.
Absolutely. And you
We're not into that.
You bring up a very good point, the whole idea of consensus.
Sarah would like to be sheriff someday, but other than that, we're not into that. Yes, the whole issue of consensuality, of course, is key to making this play.
Yes, yeah, some people actually believe... Well, there is a very fine line between abuse and consensual.
A fine line.
A very fine line. And people think, oh, okay, I'll get into BDSM, and this guy's going to beat me a little bit, and I'm going to get my release out of that.
Mm.
And they mistake it. They come along and they go, okay, I'm going to get beaten now. And they go, and they don't know that they have the ability to say, no, we don't want this. I don't want this. They actually believe that... You know, I've been abused in a relationship with a boyfriend, girlfriend, lover, husband, whatever. They believe that BDSM is their, like, escape out.
Hmm.
And that's not what I want. If I'm a master and I actually, you know, find a girl that they come into one of these clubs that I'm at and they're 18 or 19 years old and they go, oh, master, I'd love to do a session with you. And then they go, I say to them, okay, well... What is your safe word? A safe word? Oh, I don't need that. No, I don't need a safe word, you know. My boyfriend never gave me a safe word. You know,
He just beat me.
And, you know, he beat me and I took it and I went to the room and I cried a little bit afterwards. And, you know, I never said no because he said to me that it was okay. So I never said no.
But that is something you need to be educated about.
Of course. You need to have... If a master's out there performing on submissive, and I'm sure there are a lot of masters out there who say that they are masters... but have no experience, no background whatsoever. They just pick up a riding crop and then they say, hey, I'm a master and my name's Master Whatever and, you know, I'm 10 years master. Oh, really? Who did you train under? I don't know. I can't remember who it was. It was so long ago.
Well, yes. You know, violence is a human instinct,
yeah.
just like sex. And a lot of people are interested in this and because it's an instinct. It's a desire.
You have a lot of fake people
out there. And power. Power is an instinct, and surrender is an instinct that we have. We have these needs, these desires to both exert power and submit, to surrender. And we don't know what to do with these, you know. I mean, this is one reason people do end up, I think, in all kinds of bad relationships, because they have this desire to... submit, and they don't know who to submit to, and they don't know how to do this in a way that's healthy. So it's a matter of education, and I guess you're in that position of educating these
thank you
these kind of you know beaten up girls and women and guys, I guess, too.
Most of the time they don't even know that they're in this abusive relationship. They actually believe they're in a great relationship. You know, and, oh, you know, when he gets angry, he, you know, he'll slap me across the face. But it's all good, you know, because Charlie didn't mean to. And, you know, I'm just going to go in my room now, and it's going to be, it's fine, you know. Everything's going to be fine, because he really didn't mean to. Maybe he was a little bit drunk.
And then, see, she is, of course, she's being hurt, and it's against her will in a way, but she's staying with him, partly because she loves him for other reasons, but also because she wants to surrender.
Yes.
She does. She wants to be beaten in some way, but she should be beaten by somebody who's, you know, kind of caring about whether he breaks her jaw, you know, or not.
One of the fascinating things about the sir-sub relationship is the amount of care that the sir gives to their submissive. A good sir will make sure that their submissive is emotionally, physically, and even to a certain extent spiritually healthy. If not, if they're a good sir, they won't play with them because they're responsible for the submissive. And one of the things that marks BDSM relationships differently from what are referred to as vanilla relationships is everything that you see done is all agreed upon. There's a process called negotiation prior to a scene where the parties get together and say, okay, this is what we will and will not do. So even though it may look like force is being exerted, it's all agreed upon.
See, I think this stuff, and you tell me, Professor, you're a criminology professor, I think that this stuff ought to be taught in domestic violence programs. I think that couples that do love each other and have a problem with this, and there are numerous, they need to learn about it. Because if they just learn, don't be violent, which, you know, is not a bad thing to learn, but a lot of people don't know how to deal with that, and they just can't. So they fall apart, and they go back to being violent. And if they learned how to channel this violent instinct into something caring and controlled, maybe they'd be fulfilled and yet not hurting each other. I mean, it sounds so outrageous.
No, Doctor, you make a very good point, as a matter of fact, and that if the violent instinct can be implemented within a controlled environment like a BDSM scene, then I argue that it's much, much more healthier. And it takes out that aggression, but in a controlled, agreed-upon manner.
Yes, that's actually very correct. There was actually a scene done about 8 weeks ago in San Francisco at a place called the Bent Street Party at the Citadel. And the scene was a kidnapping scene, which you'll find very rare in clubs because it's very noisy and screamy, and it's an actual kidnapping scene. What they do is the girl comes in with the guy, and she walks to the other end of the bar, and then the guy runs up behind her and puts a bag right over her hair and starts pulling her towards the front door and the screaming. It's very real, but it's all staged.
And so the girl's being kidnapped.
She's being kidnapped.
And this is like her fantasy.
This is her fantasy.
To be kidnapped.
She wants to be kidnapped.
And it's a very common fantasy.
Oh.
It's a huge fantasy. People dream about it. People, you know, masturbate to it. They come to it, this fantasy of being kidnapped. Of course, when we fantasize about being kidnapped, we don't really want to be kidnapped by, like, thugs and smelly people that we don't like. We want to be kidnapped by beautiful people that we really would like to surrender to.
Kidnapped by your boyfriend or girlfriend, you know, and taken downtown, and then when the hood comes off, it's like it's a very hospitable situation because you've got your lover in front of you, and then the sex can be just unbelievable because you're built up to a frenzy by the time you get to that point. I mean, this is our process. Sometimes you can go 4 or 5 hours of just build up.
And it's very exciting, and it's great for couples who are in kind of long-term monogamous relationships, which inevitably and naturally get boring.
Yeah, if they're in a rut, for argument's sake.
Yeah, which happens as a normal phase of relationship.
It would definitely light the fire in the relationship.
So this is something... Oh, I see that Ballerina... Wait a sec, take a little break here. Ballerina is reaching for an Obama condom, and yes... We have Obama condoms. Condomania is one of the sponsors of the AeroStay Orgy for Obama inaugural ball, and we'll be
spectacular.
Distributing Obama condoms. He's right there on the condom. Cool, huh? Okay, so you can have that one.
Thank you.
You need to use it later. Or you could use it right here on the radio show. You wouldn't be opposed.
Yay, President-elect.
So, ballerina, what do you have to say about all of this?
This is all new to me. I just experienced my first large dose of BDSM at the fetish party back in Vegas last weekend. And I didn't really know anything about it at first. I thought, you know, BDSM and that whole scene was just really about people tying each other up and beating the shit out of one another. But after spending two nights with these people, I've learned that it's not about that at all.
What do you feel that it is about?
It's very complex. It's very much contractual and consensual and very safe. It's about exploring each other's limits and discovering each other's needs, and it's incredible to me the relationships that people form within it. I've met the most amazing people and learned so much about it. For me personally, it seems kind of a logical progression from the world of ballet in a way.
So you really are a ballerina.
I am.
Wow.
I'm a professional ballet dancer.
You're a professional ballet dancer.
I am.
Like with toe shoes and everything?
Point shoes and everything.
Wow.
You should see my feet. They're awful.
Uh-huh. Well, that's the sign of a ballerina.
Yes, they're quite hideous, as a matter of fact.
Well, there's
Corns
a fetish for that.
Bunions,
you know.
And awful, crooked. Yeah, ugh. I don't even want to talk about it. What a horrible visual.
They're your workhorses.
I suppose.
There's a foot fetish out there right now getting hard.
Oh, yeah, totally.
He's getting really excited by
there,
this.
There are Tony put foot it fetishes that are precisely in ballerina feet.
I'm sorry for the visual. Oh. But it's sort of a logical progression. In ballet, it's not really ever good enough. Not that there's anything wrong with
right,
that.
Right, you're always tortured.
It's a constant strive for perfection. And when you're given a correction, like, no, that's bad, and you try and improve, but the improvement is never really good enough. You can always strive for more. But
and you're pushing your body into these unnatural positions for the sake of beauty.
I'm very flexible, but my body is in a lot of pain most of the time, which I guess is conducive to this sort of
style.
Yes.
Totally. It's totally the
actually
it
really works. Mm-hmm.
But as a submissive, it's very gratifying because you have a task or a challenge, and if you make a mistake, then you're punished for it, and if you succeed, then you're rewarded for it. It's very cut and dry.
Maybe you should give the kind doctor here one of the examples of the challenges that you had last week and what the punishment would be if you failed.
Well, my first day, the challenge was it was a two-part challenge, to wear two red items all day, and no black items, and to consume only orange juice with meals. And I asked Master for an exception to the rule. Being a dancer, dancing 8 hours a day, if I could consume water as well during rehearsal. And luckily, he granted me permission for that. Otherwise,
okay,
I would have about died.
Very lucky.
Needless to say, I'm absolutely sick to death of orange juice, unless there's vodka in it. Thank you, everyone, for the vodka.
Oh, no wonder you went for the orange juice. Yeah.
Oh, conditioned response.
And what was the mistake you made?
Well, I was very successful with the red items in my everyday clothes as well as my practice clothes. I succeeded with the two red items, but I forgot entirely about the hairpins that I used to keep my bun
that
in
are
place.
Black.
They're black.
Ooh, it's tough to avoid black items.
I was so good about, and my roommate, my best friend, even helped me out. She said, no, that shirt has black in it, and I cursed
wow,
her.
Wow, your roommate helped you with that.
Thank goodness
so
for
So she's
her.
All for this kind of submissive relationship
she
you
thinks
have.
I'm out of my mind, but she loves me regardless.
But she thinks it's exciting.
She lives vicariously through me.
Absolutely.
She's very conservative, and she thinks it's lovely and hilarious. But we do live in Vegas, so it's not as if she's not exposed to stuff like that all the time. But
so what's a ballerina doing in Vegas?
There are quite a few shows where ballerinas can be very useful.
Some, I guess so.
Yeah. A lot of the shows on the strip require classically trained dancers.
Huh. Cool. Great.
What is the punishment?
Well, Master's favorite tool of torture is the violet wand. And
I actually have one.
The electrical
here.
Thing?
Yes.
Unfortunately, I because of the hairpin faux pas, I am to receive a zap on both breasts.
Ooh. Tonight?
Mm-hmm. We could do it right now.
Yes, I think so.
I got it right here.
Yes.
We could plug
Where's
it in.
Where's our photographer? Where's the...
Oh, no. No, no.
I could do it through the clothes, don't worry.
Okay. Now you're playing with power.
Okay, we are
Someone
now going to
plug this in for me.
Watch Master D administer the...
Punishment.
The box is open.
Violet wand punishment. This is an electrical sort of toy.
It's actually originally used for hair station.
Hair?
Yes.
Makes your hair grow
it
or stand
grow.
On end?
It stimulates the hair follicles to grow. It's
okay.
It's a medical device, actually.
So male pattern baldness can just sort of stick this thing all over your head?
Yes.
Really?
Just hope I don't grow hair on my boobs.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be good.
No.
Now, there are separate little fixtures for these. This particular one is for the breasts.
Ah, okay.
Lowest setting, please, Matt.
Lowest setting, no problem. Right there.
Listen to that thing buzz.
Oh, terrifying.
Ah! Wow.
There you go.
What'd it feel like?
It's, you know, when you're getting out of the car, for those of you who aren't luxurious enough to have leather seats, when you're getting out of the car and you go to close the door and you get shocked, or when you're wearing socks on the carpet and you touch something
right.
and you get the shock, it's
Is that
it's
called a plasma cone?
Very similar to that, but it's a lot stronger.
And it's very focused on
very
the nipple,
focused,
which is
yep.
a very sensitive part.
Very sensitive.
Yes.
Aww. Now they're hard. Look at
you. Oh, my goodness.
I'm really, really sorry.
What is a girl to do?
That's a shame.
Wow. Mm. Nice. Okay, well, very good. Thank you very much for your punishment.
Okay.
So let's hear a little bit about each of you and where you come from, although your identities have been kind
Hidden.
Of concealed.
Mm.
We would like you to reveal... A little bit about yourselves. Who wants to start?
I'll start.
Okay.
My name's Master D. I am 36 years old. I was born in Australia.
Hence the sexy accent.
Australia. I lived in America for about 10 years, on and off again. I went back to Australia, lived there for 10 years, and then came back here. So I've been backwards and forwards for in decades. I've been here for 4 years, then back to Australia for 4 years, then back here for 4 years, backwards and forwards mm-hmm. over the past 20 or so years.
Very jet setty.
Yeah. I'm originally not with a BDSM background.
Life will kill you.
Yeah. Originally, I have a hospitality background.
Hotel business.
I have a full diploma in hospitality management.
Excellent.
From Le Colletier in Switzerland. Even though it was a French school, they taught me English. So I never actually learned French in the entire 2 years that I was there.
Trop mal, monsieur.
I know, it's horrible. It's actually terrible. Then I left there and I went to Australia. And I missed Switzerland. I really missed it. It was so beautiful. So I went back there and I did an internship at the Borillac Hotel in 91. And one day I met the mistress. And I'm going to not reveal her name because I haven't got permission. Mm. But I can say she was a German mistress of about 10 years at the time. So that would make her a 20-year mistress now.
Is this your first
this
kind
was
of
my
official,
first official break into it.
Experience.
She was having lunch with two girls tied with leashes. And I thought, what the hell is going on? I have got to get to know this person. Right? This girl is walking around with these two stunning girls tied to leashes.
Wow.
In the middle of a restaurant, right in the middle of a hotel.
It's tied what? To leashes, but they were
leashes,
sitting down?
Sitting down at the table.
Very nice.
So I went up, so I introduced myself.
Elegant. Kinky.
I introduced myself and I said, what's going on? And she said, I'm a mistress and I recruit people all the time, just such as yourself, beautiful people. And I would like to show you what I do. Please come to my house at 10 a.m. in the morning. And she gave me the address.
Wow.
So I go down to this place and I'm 10 minutes late. And I knock on the door and she opens the door and she said, I told you to be here at 10, slams the door in my face. So I go back the next day and now I'm early. She opens the door again. She goes, it's 9:58. I told you to be here at 10. Mm. And she slams the door again in my face.
Discipline.
The third day I get there early at 9:59. I don't knock on the door till 10. She opens the door and she says, okay, come on inside. She sits down. She had about 7 submissives at the time. Girls and guys, naked, strapped to various items in the house, crawling around like animals.
At 10 a.m.
At 10 a.m. in the morning.
Wow.
This beautiful chateau, which was maybe 10 rooms up on a mountain top, you know. You think that these people, you know, don't come from good backgrounds, but most of the people in this community, in lifestyle, very wealthy, are very, very respectable members of the community, such as, arguments like professors and doctors, politicians, accountants, lawyers, doctors.
Yeah.
I mean, like a physics professor. And he's by day a physics professor at school, and by night he's got 2 girls strapped to a bed. They're 18 years old, and he's got another guy who's a dog boy. So he's the dog of the house. So
it does seem that most of the people that are deeply involved in the SMBD community are educated.
Yeah, very educated, very
disciplined.
Disciplined, exactly.
Yeah, disciplined people.
So basically,
are attracted to a disciplined form of recreation too.
I was about 3 years under her, working as a submissive. Being tortured, humiliated, a whole nine yards. And then I said to her, I would like to learn the other side. I'd like to be a master. And I started learning canes originally.
Mm-hmm.
I got a curiosity for canes and electricity. Those are my 2 favorite things.
And how old were you when you first got
into this? I was 26, 27. So
what was your first experience, though? I mean,
the
first. Maybe when you realized that you enjoyed power exchange like this.
Oh, God. I was in a club with her in Zurich, and there was a girl that came up to me, and she said, I want him to hurt me. I want him to hurt me. And my mistress at the time said, go ahead. You know, you're a switch now because I can do both things. Hurt her. So okay. I picked up a cane and I leaned her over a horse, which is one of these BDSM devices that we have. So I leaned her over this horse and I took a cane and I start beating her. And she goes, yes, yes, please, more, harder. That's when I felt so amazingly good. But at the same time, I knew I wasn't abusing the girl because she wanted it. And I knew at any time she could have yelled out a safe word, which was rabbit at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime she yelled out rabbit, I would stop immediately.
So within this framework, you could
let
go.
I could do whatever.
And that's a fabulous feeling.
And it's an amazing feeling to know that you are in total control over this person. This person has given all their power to you for a period of, let's say, 15 minutes or half an hour, whatever the session time would be. As defined per session time. Most sessions go for 15 to 30 minutes, but if you really get into it, you can go an hour, half, 1.5 hours, 2 hours. The one I did at the Broken Door back in October went for 4 hours on 2 girls. And it was non-stop. I didn't even stop to get a glass of water for 4 hours. And I was in a very heavy white Venetian outfit, as you saw, the mask, the whole time.
Yes.
So even though I was sweating and dying under there, I just did not want to let go of the power that I was feeling. Because I know the second that mask comes off...
You're in the zone.
Yeah, the second that mask comes off, my real self is back again, and Master D goes away into some sort of room, into an abyss.
What's your real self?
My real self is my real name and that I can't reveal. but he lives a very vanilla life, has a very vanilla family who don't know anything about this at all.
Family doesn't know anything about Master D.
Family doesn't know I own a dungeon. They don't know who Master D is. They have no idea what the broken door is. They don't know anything. They don't even know I live with submissives. They believe that they're girlfriends. So they think I'm just some sort of mass swinger who just goes out with like 10, 15 girls a month, you know, and guys, and, you know, they don't know what I am.
Well, they don't. They at least know about that you're not exactly vanilla. I mean,
yeah, they know I'm not exactly vanilla. They think I'm going out to bars and just picking up random strays every night, and, you know, because they do see them, but and they're always different. And it's always, you know.
And how would they feel if they found out?
I have no idea. I think my father's reaction would be send him to a psychiatric ward and lock him up and what the hell is wrong with you? Because he's a very, very ultra-vanilla person. And I think my mother would probably flip a gasket. She would probably lose her mind because she's ultra-Christian. And she would just, she would think that life is over, you know.
So wouldn't it be interesting if you found out if he had a double life?
Yeah, it would be.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, parents are people too.
Yeah.
You know, parents have, if they don't have a full double life like you do, they do have fantasies.
Yes, there would be fantasies would be defined as, you know, an escapism. But this is like, this is like an escapism and someone's created this whole world, you know, for real. So they've got the dungeon, and they've got all the equipment, and they've got the girls, and they can just take their fantasies straight to the next level and beyond.
Well, in some level, your parents might just be in awe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're just sitting there, and they know, but they're waiting for me to tell them.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps. So, Ballerina, what about your parents? What would they think of this act, this world?
Well, my father passed away 6 years ago, so I'm sure he's looking down on me, just shaking his head. What have you gotten yourself into, my baby girl? My mother, actually, bless her, she was always very open sexually. So I sort of learned from a very early age to be very open about those sorts of things. I'm not sure how she would feel about it, but I think she'd probably have to accept it eventually, and she'd still love me all the same, so.
So do you think you ever had an experience when you were young that kind of foreshadowed this life? That did you ever enjoy being submissive in a way that something just happened to you?
Actually, my current lifestyle as a dancer is very contrary to my personality. I have a very strong personality in general. But perhaps my father was very physically abusive, so that may have played a role. I never enjoyed being submissive, but it was the fear that was instilled that always made you very obedient, and then gradually the fear translated into desire to behave that way yourself.
So he really did beat you?
He did.
Corporal punishment?
Absolutely.
Like spankings,
yes,
whippings?
Spankings, whippings, hair pulling.
Hair pullings?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Emotional abuse was very strong, but it came from insecurity with his own self, and he only wanted the best for his children, so it's all very understandable, and I still love him so much for it.
Well, you have a lot of objectivity somehow.
But his drive to have me live the best life possible has translated into me being very disciplined in all facets of my life, academically, recreationally.
It's always some good that comes out of bad.
Absolutely, and then you see traits that you wish not to take on yourself, and so it helps you to become a better person.
And to kind of channel that instinct into something safe and, you know, controlled.
Exactly.
You know very well what that instinct is. You were brought up with it, but it was out of control.
That's exactly the biggest appeal. As a child, the discipline coming from your paternal side, the fear factor, you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know how much, how hard, how long, or whether you're going to be punished at all, whether it's emotionally or physically, whereas in the world of BDSM, it's very clear cut. Mm-hmm. You do this, this will be your punishment, and this many years, it's hard. And you, and again,
so you can kind of relax and feel comfortable.
Exactly, and the safe word is very, very comforting, because if at some point it's too much, you can say stop.
Yeah, I guess there was no safe word with your dad.
Nope.
There are also contracts that we write. We actually write contracts with our submissives, for lifestyle especially, we write a contract. So it's a physical contract.
What would the contract say?
It says during the time from... let's say it's a trial contract at first, from February 1st till March 1st. You are my submissive. You will take care of me in every sense of the word, as to take care of someone. You will take care of me health-wise, sexually, domestically, or you could be just a domestic submissive. You will take care of me domestically, and there will be no sexual...
Did you guys make a contract?
No.
How did
we're
you
not,
two meet? I know
not,
you met in
we're
Vegas.
We're not contracted yet.
Okay, how did you meet?
We met at a after party for the AVN.
So this was just recently. This was like 2 weeks ago or less.
Yes,
one week ago.
Very, very random, actually.
And did you see each other across a crowded room, or how did that work?
Actually, I was lying down in the bed surrounded with women, as you are, and she was across the way, and she looked at a particular girl who was a... very, very well-known local mistress. And she looked at this mistress and she went, oh, my God, this woman, I want to know this woman. So she came across the room, but the mistress went off with someone. And then she saw me and this other girl lying on the bench. Well, I just got to know these people. And the next thing you know, she's lying on the bed with me for 2 days. Well, it's like 1 day and then go back home at 8 and then come back and then the next day till 8 o'clock in the morning again.
What moment did you notice Master D?
It was immediate. I was very interested in this particular mistress whom I was sitting next to, and she was engaged in conversation with someone else. So until she was finished, I turned around and Master D was sitting there speaking with another mistress. And it was just... there's this sort of allure, this almost vampiristic quality to him. I just thought, who is this person? I need
vampiristic.
To know.
Vampiristic. Do you like that adjective?
I actually get that a lot, where people are gravitated to me. They just, even at the clubs, they want to know who I am. They just come right up to me and they go, who are you? I just want to get to know you.
It's very mysterious.
Especially if I'm around, surrounded by beautiful women.
Well, yeah.
That could happen to any schmuck.
It gets
actually worse.
Who is that guy surrounded by the beautiful
exactly.
women?
It gets worse with me. It just multiplies by maybe 100.
Yes. Well, you are an imposing figure.
Mm.
Yes. So, okay. So you had this electricity between you.
Yes.
And it just...
And I've been giving her various assignments all week, progressive assignments every day, and she's been doing them. Today was on the flight over, get to know the person sitting next to you, everything about them,
mm-hmm.
open a conversation, don't stop talking the entire way.
So, I know
this is like life coaching.
Yes, it is like a life coach.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So she got
have
to
you
know.
Have you ever had a ballerina as a submissive?
I actually never had a ballerina as
a
submissive.
What do you think?
I would love to have a ballerina as a submissive. I would really love it.
Does that mean you're not quite submissive to him yet?
Nothing contractual.
No, nothing contractual.
The roles are very clear.
Little hors d'oeuvre here. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes.
All right, and moving along to Professor.
Yes.
Where do you come from?
I'm from this area, Southern California originally, and I did my undergraduate work at one of the University of California here in psychology, then went on into sociology. Where I earned my PhD at a school in the Midwest, one of the Big Ten schools. And having this interest in deviance and subcultures and criminology, I started studying.
This was an intellectual interest.
It began as an intellectual interest.
So you were a vanilla guy with this intellectual interest, or did you have fantasies?
I did have an interest in it in terms of the aesthetic quality of the BDSM scene. The leather, the fishnets, I've always had that. But I never recognized it. But as a fellow social scientist, you understand that being an unbiased researcher is difficult. So we often follow our research paths that are influenced by personal interests.
Of course.
And so I began studying first the goth and industrial culture because I liked the aesthetic quality of that. And then I noticed that at these goth clubs, on occasion there would be fetish rooms where the BDSM scenes were being put out. Now in my private life, with my various partners, we would practice tying up and spanking and things like that in privacy. But I hadn't taken it out in public. So I'd practice it in private. But I also developed an intellectual understanding of it, an ideological understanding of it, understanding of the social psychological processes associated with it. So I had a really firm grasp in terms of the whole package of what BDSM is. And at one point, I was at a club in Hollywood, and this was a couple years ago, and I met a mistress, and we started talking, and then I was her submissive for a while. And one thing you'll find is that most doms or sirs, if they're good, will have been a submissive. You have to understand and empathize what the person is going through.
And it's an apprenticeship.
Absolutely. You actually have to have this. If there are people out there today who will be, I'm a dom, and when were you a submissive? No, never, no. No, no, no.
Right.
No. I just lifted this riding crop up, and we actually...
I know how to use it.
Yeah, and I know how to use it. We actually had one a few weeks ago. Actually, he's been hopping around to different clubs. I'm not going to mention his name, obviously, but everyone will know who he is. And he's been jumping from club to club around California.
Oh, that guy.
Exactly, that guy. And he's been hitting girls in ways with tools detrimental to their health. Right? Putting them in hospital.
Making a bad name for the
BDSM. Making a very, very bad name. He's been thrown out of nearly every place, establishment that exists. And he just says he's a master, but he has absolutely no experience as a master. He's just bought some equipment from one of the leading places like Stockroom. He's just bought some, you know, and gone. And by the way, all of our equipment downstairs is from the Stockroom. So, I mean, this is a great place to buy equipment. But they bought the equipment, and it goes, all right, this is easy to use.
Sure.
Come over here, little 18-year-old girl. I'm a master. Oh, you're a master. Excellent. You know, what's a safe word? Oh, don't worry about safe words. Safe word, schmafe word, you don't need that. just take it, you know. Please stop. No, we're not going to stop. and someone like me or the professor will have to go up and say, excuse me, can you please stop what you're doing? This girl clearly wants you to stop. You know, come and cross. You know, we're going to have to take you out of here. You're not to come here anymore.
Sure.
So we actually had this. I mean, it's very scary that people like that actually exist, that can actually think they can get away, you know.
Oh, of course. People like that are probably in the majority.
Right.
It's just, you know, the BDSM community used to be very, I think, kind of small and sheltered. And now it's opened up. There's so many fetish balls. There's all kinds of dungeons. There's so much. And anybody can order from JT Stockroom. And anybody can get into this. So... you know, at least it's a little bit better than just beating your wife. You know,
yeah,
at least
correct.
There is some level of
an outlet.
Of, you know, like some way that you know it's supposed to be under control. You're not supposed to just punch in the face here. You're supposed to at least do some, you know, spanking or something that isn't so bad. But yeah, there's a great need for education in this area.
Well, anyone can pick up a paddle and spank somebody. But it's understanding all the components of a scene, understanding what the roles are, understanding what the boundaries are. That's the critical part of it, understanding that when you do a scene with someone, there's aftercare involved, where you have to make sure that the person is okay, that they're healthy and they're psychologically there. All of this stuff is important. And that's why it's important that you learn from others, that you mentor with people. And so after I had been a submissive, then I started working with different people, learning different things. And one night, just started performing in public. And for some reason, and Master D mentioned this about himself too, the type of scenes I do, they're very stylized, they're very erotic, and people are drawn to me for some reason. I'm told I have a presence, and people are drawn to it. And it is good for the scene.
Yeah, it's excellent for the scene. It's great for us because we had an event a few weeks ago. There was a line of people, 15 people waiting for this guy. Mm-hmm. 15 people waiting to play with him. Is he ready now? Can we play with him now?
Wow.
Is she done? Can I come behind the line? And have you ever done this before? No, but I really want to play with this guy. Now, yeah. I did a scene at this particular place which was so scary and horrific. I was taking a next level of pain, right, that people were like, oh my God, is he going to kill her? is this the thing that's going to happen?
Oh yeah, I think when you put the lime in the open wound, I think
that kind of
the crowd a little bit.
Yes, it did. Yes.
Ooh. Oh God.
But she liked it. She really did like it. She was a what we call a pain under or pain bottom, pain submissive, specifically
pain slut.
You know, they really love it. They want to be taken to the next level.
Their wires are crossed.
Yeah. Some of them are wires across. Some of them, their wires are perfectly intact, but they
You're
just...
not a pain slut.
No,
oh,
ma'am.
God, she is not a pain slut, no.
I am a pussy.
You tolerate pain for the sake of a goal, I guess?
I have a fairly high tolerance because of dance. It puts a lot of stress on the body. I mean, I think, but Master D might have another opinion about that one.
I think every single kind. There are many different types of submissives. There are submissives that are domestic cleaners. There are submissives who like to be referred to as kittens or pets, who just like to be petted. There are submissives who like the sexual aspect of it and just like having sex all the time. There are submissives who just want to look after their master in a very, very educational way. They want to make him grow. They want to make him become richer or become more famous, or you can get a different submissive for every different thing, and that's why most masters will, if they're doing lifestyle, will start getting one or two or three. They'll have an alpha who would be a prime, and I have an alpha at home who is my prime submissive. And then I'll get
at home in LA.
At home right now. Well, she's not at home right now. She's out. She's out and about right now. But she is in LA at my house.
And does she know about ballerina?
Yes, she does. Yes.
And how does she feel about that?
She thinks I talk too much.
Yes, she thinks she talks too much. But that was an isolated incident where she only knew her for a period of about 2 hours after a weekend of partying. So you really can't judge anyone after that.
But is it jealousy?
Oh, to a degree, but most likely not jealousy, most likely the fear of being replaced. You know, alphas do not want to be replaced.
Of course.
If you want to bring another submissive into this relationship, you can bring another one in, but know that I'm in control, you know, because I'm your alpha.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Like first one.
Yeah, yeah. They don't want to be, oh,
well,
ballerina's
how do you feel
coming
about
in
that,
now.
Ballerina?
And, yeah.
I understand that there's a sort of hierarchy that has to be respected. Again, it's very contractual, whereas she would be the alpha sub. She would be a different type of submissive than I would be. She's a domestic, non-sexual submissive, and I would probably be in a different category than that. And so, whereas there's only a slight bit of competition for the attention of the master, it's in a completely different way.
So she's a domestic, non-sexual submissive.
That is actually written into her contract.
So you don't have sex with her?
No, of course not, no.
Of course not.
Yeah, no. She's a kitten. She likes being petted. She likes being looked after.
She sleeps at the foot of your bed?
She sleeps at the foot of my bed.
Does she have sex with anyone?
Of course, yes. She can have sex with whoever she wants.
But not with you.
As long as
of
she has permission.
Not. Of course, yes, she has to ask permission.
Wow. So
if she says to me, for example, in Las Vegas, she'll say, all right, oh, I like that guy, I want to go home with him, have sex with him. I'll go, okay.
Right.
You know, text me the address of where this guy is so I know that you're safe.
And you don't want to have sex with her, and she doesn't want to have sex with you?
No, no, no. It's a contract. The contract specifically says it's a non-sexual contract. So even if I wanted to, unless I redrafted the contract and then signed another one,
decide you want to have sex with her, you have to redraft
the contract. Yeah, I have to redraft the whole contract. And I'm just, you know, it's I get enough sex, put it that way. I don't need
to. But she's the alpha female. She's your best friend.
She would be my best friend, my best. She's mine. I care about her. I want to look after her. I want to take care of her health.
Did you ever have sex with her?
No.
One thing that underlies all of this is everything is voluntary. So at any moment, your alpha submissive can choose to just walk out. So I want to make it clear that we as doms or sirs, we do not keep anyone against their will in any way, shape, or form.
Of course.
Well, I didn't think so.
Some people might think so.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
With this particular submissive, I've got a month contract, 1 month trial contract, which started a few weeks ago. And at the end of the month, I think it's on February 8th or 9th, we will review the contract. And I will sign a six-month contract if she wants to stay. And if she doesn't want to stay, no hard feelings. I will pay for a... Which I normally do, which other masters don't do out there. I don't want someone to go, okay, you're free now, out on the street. You go, I'll go and I'll get her an apartment in L.A. and I'll pay the first month rent for her, you know, and I'll set her up and I'll give her $1,000 in her account so she's not completely desolate. And I'll say, here you go, you know, try again. Okay? No hard feelings.
Okay.
And I'll just sit back and go amongst my life. Most masters just don't give a flying hoot, you know. All right, you're done. See you later. Adios. Mm. You know, what do I do now? I'm on the street, you know. It's terrible. I'm not going to do that. I refuse to do it.
You've got a whole operation going.
Yeah.
I don't think most masters do. I mean, most people that call themselves that, you know, are not as sup.
Yeah, it's good to actually be at a place where you're financially secure and able to look after your submissives in a way that it nourishes them. There are some people out there who are vacuums of dark energy, and there are some people who you would refer to as vacuums of light energy. The professor would be light, I would be light. And there are others out there who are dark, you know, who will suck their submissives dry, both physically, mentally, monetarily, until they're just husks of human beings, just doing shows with no emotion, no satisfaction, while the master just gets off on it and just goes home and beats off on it, or, you know, sticks them in a cage outside in the shed, you know.
Doesn't
care about them at all. No caring at all. And these people, these submissives, lose their friends and family. And it's sort of like Stockholm Syndrome. They become so in love and entrenched in their master that they believe that they're in a good place, but in reality, they should just run for the hills.
Well, you know, and that is the stereotype that most people in our society have of the master-slave relationship.
That's exactly the stereotype.
They do think that that's what's going on.
That's right, and that should not be the stereotype. The stereotype should be someone like myself. I will bring a submissive in. I will learn everything about them. If they like ballet, for argument's sake, I will encourage it. Go, join go into a school. You know, you want some help with that? No problem. I'll help you with that. Financially, no problem. I want you to grow as a person, as well as growing in a SM relationship, a DS relationship, a dom-sub relationship. I want you to grow. I want your bank account to grow. I will be paying for the lot, the everything. I'll be paying for the accommodation. I'll be paying for the food. Your only job as a submissive is to take care of me. Right?
All right. That sounds
That's
like
it. It's a very easy trade.
The maid?
You know,
not a maid.
You come. You clean the house. You take care of me sexually.
Yeah.
You take care of me.
Personal assistant.
Personal
maid,
assistant.
Yeah.
Everything. And all you have to do, that's all you have to do. Right? You don't have to worry about rent checks at the end of every month. You don't have to worry about electricity, gas, utilities, internet, health, car expenses.
How much electricity comes from the violet wand?
That's exactly, that's it. Yeah, that's it, exactly.
And then there's punishment,
And then there's punishment. And all you do is you work your 3 days or 4 days a week, and your money just goes in the bank and grows.
Not a bad job.
It's not a bad job. And some submissives, they come along and they go for a ride for a year or so, and then they go back to their lives. And in that year, they've saved 10, 15 grand.
And what's your goal?
My goal? Oh, my goal with submissives is I've got fantasies, of course, like anyone else. I'm actually looking now at a 2,000 square foot loft very close to here, close to my dungeon. And I'm going to be setting up a dungeon internally inside my apartment. I'm going to be collecting submissives, I would say. I would like to have 8 or 9 submissives.
Eventually, a harem of submissives.
A harem of submissives for various things.
All female?
Yeah, I'd like all female, because then they can all sync up at the same time and go out of town.
And remember, though, there has to be one set of twins.
Yes, one set of twins, exactly. That's the dream. One set of twin submissives and 6 other submissives.
But Master D, you bring up something very important when you're talking about the power exchange relationship, is that the submissive, and many people do not see this, they actually grow as an individual.
Oh, of course.
Under the tutelage of the sir. And many submissives I've worked with comment often about how they've learned so much about themselves, they've grown so much as an individual. And that's the part that most of society doesn't see. They see it as an oppressive relationship, whereas in fact it's quite the opposite, that they're actually growing as an individual by being in the relationship. And that's kind of the irony of the BDSM community and the DS relationships, is that the submissive actually grows as a person. In many ways. So it's not just a one-sided, oppressive, subordinate type of relationship. It's something where both parties benefit mutually.
Yes, that's very correct. It's good to actually see that a submissive will grow to their full potential while they're with you, mm-hmm. and be someone who comes in very light and fluffy and, oh, I'm a ballerina, and you go, oh, ballerina, well, you can't practice ballet anymore because you're my submissive, and you're going to be just doing this domestic cleaning. But no, but I want to, sir. I'm a ballerina, and I've done this. I don't really care. You know, that is what people are looking on the outside. They're going, oh, that's what it is. But mm-hmm. it isn't. It only is in a fractional percentage of what you would call the DS market. Maybe 2%.
So, Professor, we talked about what your compadres here, what their families think. What does your family think?
Well, they are aware that I'm into the scene, but I'm at a point now in my life where it's pretty much I do what I want to do, and they're okay with it. They're fairly understanding.
Okay.
In fact, over the holidays, I shared with my mom and said, oh, by the way, yeah, I'm doing research, and I'm now a professional dom. And
really? Your mom?
My mother.
What did mom have to say?
Mom said, I'm very proud of you.
Really?
And I thought that was great. I thought it was great. One thing that it made me feel is, it was I related it to someone who was gay or lesbian, and who come out to their family about themselves. It was very liberating. It was very liberating. Just like the first night that I performed in public, it was very liberating because it was an embracement of something about myself. Mm-hmm. So sharing that with my family contributed to that, gave me a sense of liberation.
All right. Well, I'm amazed at how quiet the bonobos have been here. So
maybe they're in shock.
I think they're enthralled, perhaps. You've got quite some interesting stories, each of you. But I just wanted to see if anybody else has some questions for our guests.
They could have one question.
Come to a microphone. Okay. Yes.
Come on over here.
This is Sister Sarah. Sarah Sue.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
So the one question I've kind of had all night and that I've always had about the BDSM culture is that when you approach everything so contractually and you're also educated and intellectual, like, does that, you know, hinder the, like, passionate sexual experience because you're so cerebral about your sex?
Come watch the show this Saturday.
Well, yeah, but it does hinder it a little bit. You've got to be objective about all of it. You've got to see what the particular submissive wants in the relationship and then work a contract around them. If they come into a relationship that they have anxiety issues, for argument's sake, and they want to get over their anxiety issues, and you're their best master for it, but I don't want to have sex with you, I want to live with you, and I want to get over my anxiety issues, then I'll draw up a contract with you, and my goal will be, over the period of whatever time we're together, for me to help you get over your anxiety. If it is that you come into the relationship, I just want to have sex all the time, I don't want to clean, and I don't want to be beaten, I'll go, okay, I will sign up a contract for you for that.
Okay, so how about love then? Should I use the L word?
Love really
how about
does
love, right? Because you I asked you and you said contract, but I mean,
no,
the idea is, doesn't that spoil that magical chemistry that you have in a dark night and your blah blah hallway, blah blah.
You have chemistry, yes. You have chemistry, yes. And I would say, I would define it as lust first. There would be a lot of lust. Love, it's very confusing.
Do BDSM people love?
Of course they do. You can fall head over heels in love for your submissive after a while, and it can be the worst kind of breakup when you break up from them or they leave you. It can be, it's like a person is pulling your heart straight out of your chest. Because in our world, when you get to know someone, a year is like 10 years. Because you get to know them so well, you get to know every part of them, they get to know every part of you. It is so difficult when one of them leaves.
Yeah, we were talking about this, in fact, today before the show.
Yeah.
That when people have a relationship in addition to a DS relationship, that relationship is intensified and magnified. So if there's a loving relationship and a DS relationship, when that relationship dissolves, because of the degree of intensity of that relationship, the breakup and dissolution is that much more painful. So it is very difficult to see a relationship end within the BDSM scene, because the people, in a shorter amount of time, because of the intensity of the play, because you are, when you're playing with someone, you're giving them absolute trust in one another. And so it magnifies and intensifies that relationship. And do dogs fall in love with their submissives and vice versa?
Yes, of course they do.
Yes. I just went through ending a relationship with one of my submissives, and it was very, very difficult.
I helped you.
Yeah, yes. And Master was instrumental in working me through that, putting these things out to me. And this was a situation where she wanted to date a vanilla guy, and that was her choice. Was it difficult? Absolutely, absolutely. And it's a, I don't want to say a dangerous area to go, but as a sir, you have to be very, very conscious about where your feelings are.
Yes, you really do. I mean, I had a relationship with one of my submissives years ago when I was living in Australia, and I fell head over heels in love for this girl. I mean, really, smack bangs, love, right? But I started laxing in my duties.
Was she your submissive?
Yes, yes. I was laxing in my duties because I didn't want to see her, you know. I didn't treat her anymore the way I did a submissive. I wanted her as a girlfriend. And then it eventually got into that, and it just got, you know, she didn't want me to have another submissive, and it just got very, very complicated and convoluted. And as relationships do. Ideally... Eventually, maybe, who knows, I will fall in love. Who knows? I have been in love in the past, and my fiancé died. So I guess I'm sort of numbed to love right now. I was heavily in love with someone. I was engaged, and she got struck by a truck and died in hospital after 12 hours of clinging on to life. And I think after that, I shut down for about 2.5 years. I didn't even actually have any kind of sex whatsoever for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was, like, numb to everything, and I was living with some missives at the time who were trying desperately for me to, you know, sir, you know, you got to get out there. You got to go out with this girl. This girl likes you. And I was just, you know, buzz off. Mm. You know, leave me alone. I don't care. You know, no one's ever going to come along like that again. You know, leave me alone completely. And I completely shut down. But eventually you pull yourself back from it, and here I am today. So can you fall in love with your submissive? Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's the answer, yes. But it's a very, very...
Delicate
flower. It's a different delicate flower, put it that way.
Well, it's a little bit like falling in love with someone you work with, you know. It's,
yes.
It's tricky.
It's very tricky.
I mean, in a way, this is your work. I mean, you have other work, but this is a form of work for you, and it's a calling for you. And so when you fall in love with someone, and that makes you a submissive. I mean, when people are in love, they're both surrendering to the love.
That's right.
And it's not a case where someone is taking care of the other until you kind of get past that, and then you make a contract. I mean, in regular relationships, we make contracts all the time. Marriage is a contract.
That's right.
The whole idea of monogamy is a contract. Or maybe you have a contract to be a swinger. Or you have a contract to, go and go dancing with other people but not have sex with them. I mean,
I actually recommend to people who are... I know some swingers out there who actually don't have contracts. And I recommend them get a contract. Say, you know, on the contract, I am allowed to have sex with this person as long as I tell you, as long as it's protected sex, and vice versa.
A lot of people find the idea of contracts unromantic.
Yes, but it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
also.
yeah, exactly. I mean, some people find marriage unromantic. Mm. Any kind of contract is going to codify something that some people think should just be spontaneous.
Yes.
And spontaneity is exciting and beautiful and dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're dealing with such dangerous items like canes and electrical toys, contracts are maybe more important than when you're just dealing with your tongues and, you know, body parts. But even then, anyway, did you have a question? Yeah, come forward.
I like what you talked about spontaneous combustion.
Mm-hmm. It's always
because I was wondering, having these contracts, how do you deal with supplementing that spontaneity so it doesn't violate the contract? And then through this process, I think you have to maintain a certain level of focus to honor the premise of what you're doing here. And does that spill over to you professionally? Kind of keep that focus. You know, I've been in a great marriage for a long time, and I haven't really violated the contract, but we leave room for spontaneity. But it's increased my focus professionally. Have you ever done any studies, certainly for the professor there, that people involved in these contracts, these relationships, sometimes do better and progress better in their professional careers than they would have otherwise? I think there might be some evidence of that.
I haven't done any studies myself on it, but from what I've seen in the literature regarding people in scene and BDSM lifestyles, if you use success in terms of socioeconomic status as a proxy for professional success or success in their careers, what you find is that people involved in BDSM tend to be more educated, more fluent than the larger population. That's the closest I can come to approximating this idea of contracts translating into success professionally.
So there's probably too much autocorrelation, I guess, not to get too technical then, to really separate the effect. But it seems like it would actually sharpen the saw in a way to really, you know, discipline yourself like this. It might be good for certain people that need to get focused, have a lot of talent, and really kind of bear down.
Well, if you're Master D submissive, he'll kind of set you up, maybe send you to, you know, some kind of vocational school or something.
Yeah, it's good to be Master D submissive. Put it that way. Well, it's also about what you were saying with the contracts. You actually have meetings every few weeks also while you're under contract to make sure that everything's going well. You see, I'll sit down with my submissive and I'll say, are you happy? Hmm. Are you happy here? And she'll say, oh, no, I'm not happy. I wasn't happy with what you did to me here. And I'll go, okay, and I'll correct it. Right? But if the submissive is under contract and she doesn't say anything or he doesn't say anything, I'm not going to know. And things are going to continue. And
have submissives ever done something to get you? I mean,
oh yes, I've had horrible submissives in my life. I think I've been through about 7 or 8 submissives in 10 years.
What's like one of the worst things that they've done?
The worst thing was I had a girl submissive, had a crush on my brother, my younger brother.
And does he know about your scene?
He thought it was my girlfriend. So I can't blame him, I guess. And he grabbed her one night, and they had sex, and I came in. I walked in on it. And she hadn't asked me anything about it. She hadn't told me anything about it. Now, had she said prior, you know, I really like your brother, and I want to have sex with him, well, I probably would have said no. But after a few minutes of conversation, I probably would have said, okay, sure, use a condom, whatever, good luck, you know, because that's what I normally do. Just, you know, as long as you're safe, you know, go for it. You know, you only live once, enjoy.
Use an Obama condom.
Yeah, just use an Obama condom, you know, even though he was in the Senate, I think, back then. But yeah, use an Obama condom, you'll be fine. Go for it, have sex, do whatever you want. But she hid it from me.
Oh.
She didn't tell me. She kept it secret for weeks. And eventually I found out and I flipped a gasket. I pulled her aside. I got very angry with her. I didn't throw her out. I punished her. I had her clean a 1,000 square foot apartment with a toothbrush.
Whoa.
So it took her about 2 days. But she did a really good job. And after that, she never made a mistake ever again. But, and I've given some...
And what happened with your brother?
My brother moved on. He's now married. He's got kids, you know.
Oh, okay.
You
didn't talk to him about it?
I talked to him a little bit about it, but, I mean, he couldn't resist. I mean, this girl was hot. So he couldn't resist.
Has a submissive ever, like, sued you or anything?
No, never. I've had male submissives also over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Destined to female submissives. So, I mean, I'm pretty open when it comes to submissives. I don't really care what shape, size they are, because there are so many different variety of roles that
really?
You can attain. There's maybe 4 different types. There's actually 9 different types, but there's about 4 main types. Pain submissive, a pet submissive, a sexual submissive, domestic submissive. So you can have all 4, for argument's sake.
Right, right.
And then you're totally satisfied in every area of your household, right?
And do you have all 4 at the moment?
At the moment, I have 1. When I move into my nice big loft, I will start recruiting more.
Right, the harem.
The harem of submissives. I will, and I can manage, my current budget allows me to manage about 4 or 5 a week.
Would you like to put out an ad right now on the radio show?
Oh, good Lord, I'll be hit up. I put an ad on Craigslist to do a scene with someone in San Francisco once, and I had maybe 200 something replies in 3 hours. It was ridiculous. My mobile was ringing off the hook. So, and eventually I ended up working with a porn star, which was, you know, as irony would have it, you know, and it was a really good scene. But if I put an ad out, you would have all these 18 and 19-year-old girls who are in school wanting to be, you know, taken care of for a year. They wouldn't really know what they're getting into. Per se, they go, oh, this is great. I'm going to have free accommodation, and all I have to do is have sex with a guy once in a while, or clean the house, or all I have to do is be a pet in the corner, and I can have all the sex I want with other people. This is the best life ever, and you know he's going to pay for my rent, and he's going to nourish me at the same time. This is great. Where do I sign up? But it's more than that. So as much as I'm being nice. Like on the outside, there's also the mean cruelty sadistic side of me that comes out also sometimes, where I tie you up and I stick you in a bathtub for 6 hours, you know. Ooh. But it's a fine line, put it that way.
Wow. You do seem to be so, like,
mellow.
Touching and caring with the ballerina here.
I do.
I
like petting her. She has such soft skin. It's very irresistible. It's addictive. I'd like to do more than pet her, but I'm restricting myself. Restraining.
I'm not.
I am restraining myself.
Nora.
Yeah. I am under a lot of restraint.
Yes. Well, that's self-imposed,
yes.
Certainly.
Very well behaved, master.
Yes, I'm a masochist also, so it helps.
Are you?
I am. I actually am. I.
Is there someone that dominates you lately?
Oh God! You know, there is a mistress out there who would love to actually begin a relationship and dominate me from time to time, and I can dominate her. Mm-hmm. But in my current situation, I'm actually in a very small place. It's like 700, 800 square feet. I know that's really teeny tiny, but I need more space. You know, right. Once I have more space, I can have more people. Once I have more people, I can start doing the full lifestyle dream that I would like.
The harem.
Like I had in Australia. I actually had a mistress who would dominate me, and she had her own harem of submissives, mostly male, and I had my female submissives. It was a very exciting house, put it that way.
So how would you characterize the American S&M BD scene as opposed to Australian or Swiss?
Here it's way more open than Australia. London and Germany would be the two hotspots, obviously, for SM and lifestyle. But most lifestyle people are very hidden. They don't come out. They sit in their rooms in Beverly Hills and with their submissives, and you never see them.
People are more open about it here.
Here they're more open, yeah.
Yeah, especially in L.A.
Here in L.A. they're more open. But you do also have a very, very hidden group who most likely listen to your radio show and most likely listen to these things and are sitting there going, wow, that's us, you know, who have their submissive, and they'll only have their alpha submissive. Mm-hmm. And she'll be at his feet right now, kneeling, and or her head will be on his knee, and he'll be petting her, or him, and they'll go off into their room and they'll do a little bit of beating or flogging or whatnot, mm-hmm. and they'll never go out. They'll never go out and they'll never go to a fetish bar. They'll never perform publicly. They just keep it very private inside their house.
As people often keep their sex lives.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Professor, do your students know what you do?
As a matter of fact, I do. And this is a nice segue because I do incorporate my lifestyle into my class. One of the courses I teach is policing society. And we talk about stereotypes and how stereotypes affect how we treat each other. And I talk about, I ask them what they know about S&M and BDSM. And their first response typically is that it's something where someone is exploiting someone else, the people are bizarre, and the negative stereotypes. But then I deconstruct it and talk about the conceptual aspect of it. And it culminates in I bring a professional mistress into class, and she does a presentation. And then I take them to one of the clubs here in L.A., and by the end of the night, the majority of them have a really, really good time.
Do any of them feel that this is really wrong?
There will be a few of them. The majority of them do not. And in fact, I have quite the opposite happen, where I'll spark something in somebody and they'll say, oh, this is something I've been looking for. This is something that I desire. This is something I want to be a part of. Most recently, I have crossed one of my students over to the dark side, as I like to say that I do. He fell in one of my classes that came to the club and just loved it, and now he's working as an assistant dom with me, and he's one of the boys in blue with LAPD, as a matter of fact.
Really? Yes, yes. Well, they do practice a lot of these things, but as we said, non-consensually. Yeah.
We actually had one in the club last night. I perform every week, and in this particular club, this guy came up and he was watching a scene that I was doing, and he was totally vanilla, as we say. And he goes, "Does the girl suffer?" I said, "No, the girl's not suffering." "Well, can she talk?" I said, "Of course she can talk." I said to the girl, "Talk," and she was like, "I'm not suffering at all. I mean, it's all consensual, 100%. You know, I want him to beat me like this." And she was cut in the back, but you know, I want him to do this to me, right? And the guy was like, "Well, can I do it?" And I said, "Well, you can't actually, because you're not qualified for this. But you can spank her if you'd like with your hand across her butt." And he took his hand and he spanked her, and she had this reaction that was like, "Oh my God!" You know, just totally joking. And the guy jumped back 2 feet and ran out of the room. And I had to run after him and say, "Oh no, it was totally joking. She was joking. Do it again." He did it again, and she didn't react the same way. And I said, "You see, you didn't hurt her. Everything's okay." But I think you have to do that to each different person in society before they actually can adapt to it. Because they look at it from the outside and they hear, you know, "Oh, BDSM, S&M, oh, that's chains and whips and people without consent and you know, slavery." And you know, it's just a misconception. It's hearsay, and unless you actually witness it yourself, you know, you have no right to judge a people based on hearsay.
Well, a lot of people judge based on their religion. You, of course, grew up with Christianity, and you didn't grow up with much religion, or?
I went to Catholic school for 9 years.
Catholic school, okay.
So we had a ruler, plenty of that.
Really? So
yeah,
not
rod.
Only did you get it
the
from
rod.
Your dad, you got it at school.
You got the iron rod.
Wow.
Flat skirts and everything, man.
Corporal
oh, God
punishment
Almighty.
At school. And you, did you grow up with a religion?
Not very much, no. Catholicism, but... No, and one thing that when you talk about religion, one of the conceptions is that people in the BDSM scene are anti-religion or maybe even satanic or something like that, and it's really quite the opposite.
Devils.
devils, yeah. People are very spiritual, and it's consistent with self-discovery, self-actualization, and growth. So there's negative connotations in terms of having a cult-like status with BDSM.
I would go that most DOMs, as far as most DOMs are very caring, loving individuals in reality, and not these hard shells that everyone perceives them to be. They see in a club, "Oh, this guy is dressed up in a full military gear, and he's beating this girl, and he's whipping her, and he's like, this guy must be like the strongest, you know, person you ever seen on the outside world." But on the outside, he's like weak and, you know, just a normal, you would never know who it was if you bumped
Often
him in the street.
People are sort of the opposite of what they come across in the scene.
Yeah.
So, well, we're at the end of our show, I think, pretty much. And let's give a little hand to our guests.
Thank you
for sharing
Thank
your
you.
Public
Thank you.
And private
nice being here.
Selves. And we're going to hear and see more from you on Eros Day this coming Saturday night. And we're very excited about that. We're going to see you perform and show off some of this stuff. Just on stage, in cages, on the cross, all kinds of stuff. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to have a lot of hot guests. Go to the site, drsusanblock.com, and you can find out more about who's coming to Eros Day, and of course, give us a call. You know what? I haven't even given out the number yet. What? Give out the number. Now, 213-749-1330. But it's too late to call the show, so you just have to call if you want to come to Eros Day. And maybe there are a few spaces left for you. But it's going to be a very exciting evening. We're going to celebrate the power and glory of Eros, and we're going to celebrate the new era of hope for change in America and the world. Hope is the new black.
That's right, Joe Obama.
Yes.
Keep hoping. Keep hoping.
Go, Obama.
And and we're going to hope that maybe we can channel some of this violent energy into creativity and pleasure and sensuality and love instead of war and non-consensual craziness. So that's the hope, and that's the plan. So we're going to celebrate anyway. I mean, you know, who knows what's going to happen, but we're celebrating just the fact that we're going to have a change, that we're taking out the old Bush crime family and opening up to the new with an
crime
orgy
family.
For Obama. Yeah, the new crime family. Okay. Thank you, Brother Joe. Thank you, Brother Brand.
You're welcome.
Sister Sarah, Mar, Michael. Thank you, our guests, Master D.
Thank you.
Ballerina.
Thank you, Doctor.
Professor
My
from
pleasure.
The Broken Door LA. Broken Door LA is their website, brokendoorla.com. And we're excited about sharing AeroStay with you. We're excited about sharing AeroStay with you, my darling listener. Even if you can't be here in the flesh, you can join us online, because we'll be broadcasting live from the speakeasy. Every little flick of the whip is going to be out there online for you to watch. So just go to drsusanblock.com and click in the middle where it says Orgy for Obama, and you can sign up to watch us online. And in the meantime, be good, be happy, be consensual. Try not to hurt anyone unless they really want to be hurt. Make like bonobos, not baboons. Make love, not war. Make love to someone you love tonight, even if that someone is you. I love you. And I love you, Max. You're going to be home real soon. Bye-bye.